Welcome to next episode of Venture Vitals podcast by Celestinus, where we invite distinguished startups, investors, and everybody from the health tech and medtech arena universe. This is so fascinating that actually we have two guys from HTG Medical, a startup from middle of Europe, who in a way made Celestina's reality. So before I ask first question and introduce our guests, let me share a personal story. A long time ago in a galaxy far, not so far away, in a at the Institute for Clinical and Experimental Research in Prague, after a hackathon, we, together with Yevgeny, we saw these two guys. I think maybe Christoph was also there, and we thought, what a pity that there is no future for such talent. These guys should be able to keep exploring the fascinating world of medtech and build something and maybe have a new path in their lives. And that's one of the reasons, because we were so amazed at your skills at the hackathon, that together with Yevgeny, we finally managed to put Celestina's incubation program on its feet. And it's thanks to you guys. So big thanks to Max and also Tobias, that you were there at that moment, at that nexus of time and history.
Well, big thanks to you as well, yeah.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having us here. And secondly, this is the first time and I'm hearing the story. And it feels amazing to be part of such adventure. And hopefully Celestinus will help other startups to grow at least as fast as ours. And again, thanks for organizing such stuff.
So my first question to you guys, you look happy because you are happy. You have just concluded your early seed financing investment round, if I can use that word. So big congratulations, finally assembling a reasonable sum of money that should get you past certifications stage, hopefully, and get you to the market. Could you maybe take us through your journey from nathing to current investment? So I know I already said it started at a hackathon in at a hospital in Prague, but maybe you could describe your journey from that moment until now.
Okay, yeah, it was quite a bumpy road from the moment on. Shortly, at the hackathon itself, I think that we either won it or we were in the second place and we were celebrating. And the hospital itself, the Institute of Clinical and Experimental Medicine, came to us and saying, congratulations, guys. You are, skillful and everything, but we really, really need this solution. We see a huge potential in it. How can we help you? And for us, this was a deal breaker. It was the very first time after many hackathons where we finally see that something can make a difference, that we should invest more time, money, our money at first, and energy into creating something meaningful. And basically from that moment on, we start spending our weekends and our nights building something from scratch, some very, very, very early prototype that look terrible into something that's currently looks semi-terrific. And in the process, attend several incubators and places that can help startups to grow. First of all was Celestinus. Second was started from local bank, GSOB. Not sure how his name in abroad.
Czechoslovak Trade Bank, but whatever. Yeah,
exactly. And basically in the meantime, we were getting in touch with more and more hospitals. with more and more both doctors and nurses, which we developed this solution for. And from this perspective, we started to be like interesting for investors.
Yeah.
And the harsh reality is that money is a real enabler in healthcare sector and in healthcare startup environment. And without these investors' money, it would be unmanageable and impossible to continue with our development, because everything is super regulated. Everything is very hard to get inside, to get the data, to get the approvals, to get everything. So basically money enables us to have enough time to do that, to get more skillful people in the project, and actually to continue and hopefully one day to get the products to the market.
Yeah. Basically, up until now, from my perspective, the story we've had is one of user discovery, first of all. It's just of talking to many, many nurses, many, many doctors, and just trying to kind of understand their perspective. Because obviously, as a normal person, you have no idea what's happening in hospitals, right? What their life is like, what their problems are like. So you have to understand it from an outside perspective. And then the other sort of major theme we had was crossing the sort of barrier to entry. As Tobias said, it was just trying to like get into all of the information, find all of the information, find all the relevant people to talk to actually get the information, and then sort of untangle it, right? It looks very sort of daunting from the outside. Everything is as to be actually very regulated and very hard. But if you take the time to untangle it, to study it, you can sort of try to see patterns, you can start to see where it makes sense, and you can really imagine yourself doing it, right? But it's a long story of basically crossing this initial barrier to entry and then understanding it. And from that point on, you can actually talk to investors as someone quite a bit capable in this, and then you can start doing it for real.
And there is one thing that is resonating through the whole journey, and is the fact that we started with a problem. At the hackathon, and this is the case on most of the projects on hackathons, you start with the problem that is based on the organizer, in our case, a hospital, and that we know that this is something worth solving. And we try to keep our focus on the problem itself, no matter what the solution looks like at the moment. And this resonates well with nurses, with doctors, with hospital management, but also with investors. Because the product itself, the solution, it's not in the final form, and for some time it won't be, but the problem itself, it's very easy to understand and very easy to resonate with. In our case, it's helping nurses to spend less time with repetitive work, and also to get much more granular and more secure data in the process.
Yeah.
Without paying a penny more than they're currently paying. And this is basically a no-brainer suddenly for everyone involved. So start with the problem and have something that can resonate with as many people as possible. And also what is surprising, at least for me, almost everyone that we talk to has either his mom, his aunt, or anyone in close relations.
Someone is always
involved in healthcare, either as a nurse or as a doctor, so they can feel instantly, this is real, this is actual problem. Oh, come on, guys, thank you for solving this. So for me, this is a huge realization how large the healthcare is and how much in the crisis is for a long time, and the crisis is getting deeper and deeper.
Although just one more thing, our lead investor's mom is actually, I think, a nurse, a pediatric nurse or something. And I remember when we were starting out the sort of discussions with our lead investor, he asked her about it, and he told her about our product and gave her the pitch deck and everything. And I distinctly remember him calling me and telling me that his mom thinks our product is completely like senseless and it doesn't make any sense. He doesn't understand it at all. But so not all nurses would understand it from the sort of start point, but it ended up being a successful investment nonetheless. So.
And maybe now is the right time to tell what we actually do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't know if you wanted to ask a question directly.
This is what we are going to. Yeah, actually, I was. First of all, guys, it's a great honor to have this conversation with you in a very important moment in your like innovation journey that you just raised around. And And actually, the whole story sounds like that it's not useless to participate in hackathons at the end of the day, right? So it can turn into something. Yeah, it takes time and effort, but it can. And even in healthcare, which is maybe the toughest sphere in all the innovation like we have on the planet. Nevertheless, yes, I was gonna ask you, yeah, it was like a hackathon idea that you implemented. And what's going on now? I mean, so if and you mentioned this nurses that it saves time for them and helps. If it's working anywhere, and yeah, please tell what it is now. HTC Medical. Yeah.
Essentially, we were developing this product, which is called the Eurogram, funnily enough. It's a name which we came up with during the hackathon, and it just stuck with us for forever and ever. And what the device does is that it automates urine output measurement in the ICU. So the status quo is that in the ICU right now, they would have these urine collection bags because patients are equipped with a urine catheter, right? Because they're unable to move, they're unconscious or something like that. And they would, every hour, every half hour, something like that, the nurse has to like physically go and see the urine bag and measure it. You know, there's lines on the bag. She has to measure it physically. And then she has to go back to her sort of nurse station. She has to write it down on a piece of paper. And then she has to sometimes also input it into a computer, into like a digital system, right? And there's several issues with this status quo, right? One of them is that it's obviously quite inaccurate. Because you know the nurse is really just like eyeballing it from the bag. The second issue is that it's obviously a huge time waster. Third issue is that it's not very granular and it's not very like regular, right? It's not every calendar hour. It's every sort of whenever the nurse has time, right? And it's once per hour, so the data isn't very very granular. And maybe she forgets to put it into the computer system, or she does four of them at once 4 hours from now, or something. So there's a lot of sort of issues with that. And we decided to solve this problem because if you do manage to solve it, you not only do you save the nurses time, you sort of save them effort, and you save them sort of like mental capacity that they can sort of dedicate to their patients. But most importantly, you also get much better data for the doctors and for the decision makers to look at. And suddenly, because urine output is still a vital metric, as vital as anything like heart rate or oxygen saturation, suddenly you get this new metric that you have an unprecedented sort of accuracy that you can use to then predict things like, say, kidney diseases or kidney issues and hydration and that sort of stuff.
And I prefer to tell the short story that we measure piss.
Yes.
Short story. Yeah.
But and also the name Eurograms works very well, like an understanding yeah. What's going on. Maybe I will follow up with a quick comment question, because I remember when you guys introduced this solution, yes, and the plans were also, hey, we want to measure also like a color or maybe even provide analysis. Do they still have these plans? And so, I mean, any maybe advance in this direction?
Not for this first version of the device. And the idea is like simple to get to the market as quickly as possible with enough value and then expand on the product itself. Yeah, so on the first step, we aim to be 1M MDR certified medical device, which means that we basically just wanna tell the nurse that this amount of urine is in the collection bag. And what's next is up to you. Yeah, you decide whether there's any problems, anything else. And later on, we want to build upon on that. One of the reasons is complexity. Yeah, measuring color brings more complexity, both from the training perspective, but also from the hardware perspective and certification perspective. And another reason is the simple device you can create with still enough value for the nurse. The smaller device you can like basically build. And we also realized that size matters. Pun, another pun intended. And that the smaller stuff is, the more suitable for the harsh ICU environment it is basically. So that's another reason. As small and as utilized device as possible.
It's definitely a story of like whittling down the problem to its sort of essential core, right? The biggest problem is not having automated urine output measurement, and then everything else is kind of like a bonus. And you have to decide if that bonus is worth the extras or not. And we simply decided that for now, we need to solve the core problem and learn how to sort of develop and deploy the device solving that core problem. And then we do the rest later.
Yeah. And at the same time, currently, HDG Eurogram, trademark, is currently our first product. And we already have plans for at least 3 more products that are still focused on the nurse, on measuring the patient itself. And we would like to be like diverse in our portfolio. But like we have to start somewhere, and this is for us really the stepping stone to learn all the necessary requirements from the regulation perspective, hardware, manufacturing perspective, software and others. But we want to continue. Like this is just the very first ball in the large pendulum that we want to utilize. May I say our goal to?
Sure. Oh God, yeah. Above. Yeah.
My vision is one day, either with Elon or it doesn't really matter who will be the first one, but with the first astronauts heading towards the Mars or even to Andromeda Galaxy, we would like to be a part of the equipment that the astronauts are having on their body, and we will be the ones measuring some of their vitals and sending the data reliably to like the central monitor. This is not the end goal, it's like in the middle of our journey, but this is the way that we are heading currently.
Yeah.
Hey Musk, do you hear that?
Or Bezos, or
remember this tweet.
Exactly. I'd like to sell you some medical devices.
I think with aging population, and I can feel aging inside me happening, we'll need to monitor lots of fluids and outputs so that we can prolong our wonderful lives. So if somebody one day is gonna stick something into me, I want HDG medical technology to run it. At least I can impress the nurses. You know, I know the founders of these of this technology. You are now sticking in me. So, but anyway, I wanted to ask about two things. One relates to the process, how you build your product, because I remember from a hackathon I did a few years back, it was completely different. It was related to fluid input or intake, not output. We were building a beer tap, you know, for restaurants and cafes. And the way it started is that all the relevant competitors' products were bought and disassembled and kind of reverse engineering, looked for a unique perspective, for unique also IP that could be used in a future product. So what was your approach? I understand it was from the need of the nurses and the hospital, that was the starting point, but sooner or later, you must have looked into your competitors and see whether there is like a value, a unique take that can also be protected so that you know you can you have a future in that arena. So that's my question, the first one, like what was this development journey? Was it purely design thinking approach, or was it also like reverse engineering or looking at the competitors? And then I know that at the time where you founded HDG Medical, I think Max was still underage in terms of when you are able to found a company. So my question is, how did you do that? So I think you were 17 or 16 at that time.
17, yeah.
And you are not allowed to be a partner of a company unless you are 18 years old. So maybe you could also give us a take, if you go back to history, have you managed to go through that period and make yourself an official legal entrepreneur at an earlier age?
I think we can start with the first question. To sort of touch on our development process, I think there was a lot less reverse engineering involved, and purely for the reason that, you know, in the sort of healthcare space, first of all, there's much less competitors. We don't have more than, let's say, 10 competitors or something. And the other more important reason is that it's quite hard to get your hands on medical devices as a regular person, right? You won't just be sold something. If you text them, I want to buy this for my grandma at home, they probably won't sell it to you. So there's a bit of a different process with procurement and sort of getting their hands on it, right? And also the competitors are much more protective of their IP. But definitely it wasn't like a closed eyes approach. We were looking at our competitors, and I think the process there was, yes, it was a lot of design thinking, a lot of sort of our own iteration, our own sort of thinking, but there was definitely a process of looking at our competitors and trying to whittle down like what our particular USP is going to be. And I think we landed pretty much on the fact that we want to be as integrable and as kind of seamless as possible. We don't want to force any new processes on the hospitals. We don't want to force any new things on the nurses. We really just want to basically augment their workflow, not like make it more complex. We just want to sort of integrate into it and give our benefits in that way.
Yeah, and I slightly remember that even during the hackathon, when we were using Miro, we have a list of all the competitors and see how they approach the problem itself. And we just realized that none of those basically make sense in the real world scenarios, because all of them were quite large, heavy, in most cases require electricity plug to be in the socket. And when we were discussing this with nurses, they were like, oh, this is rubbish. We will never utilize such large device. And that's also one of the reasons why we drop the idea of measuring the color itself.
Yeah.
So we find that on the market, there is a gap basically for very small device that is affordable, that every bed can be equipped with, and that can basically become a natural like part of the processes in themselves. So we finally find a gap, and then we force ourselves not to go outside of the gap, because all the time, every other week, we have this brilliant idea what can be add in, but all the time we were forcing ourselves to simplify. So no, this doesn't make sense, yeah. This idea, and let's drop this extra button. Let's make it as intuitive as possible, because once again, we were almost every other week inside of the hospital talking with the relevant staff and iterating with them on true basic human-centered design methodology.
Yeah,
this was heavy, and it enables us to create something that makes sense, and it seems to be like very promising.
I would venture to say that healthcare is probably the most problem-driven industry out of all of them. If you think about like enterprise B2B, there's still some discussion to be had between the user and the sort of developer, as to like the user is quite happy to change their workflows and their beliefs if it makes sense for them. Whereas in healthcare, it's really a lot more about just understanding the world that you're not a part of, and then just focusing on the problem and not sort of getting distracted with things that might look cool to you as a regular person, but are not actually very beneficial for the healthcare professional in question that you're actually solving the problem for.
And one of the things that helped us during the process was a huge amount of naivety. We were naive, we steer out, and we hope for the best. And in most cases,
it happened. Yeah. There's no point in sort of dwelling on the fact if you can. There's quite a famous story in our company of me as quite a young person. I think I must have been 17 or 18, going up to the manager of one of the biggest and most funded hospitals in the Czech Republic, and informally with his name, just saying like, hey Peter, I'm Max, and then I just told him what we do and started talking to him like nothing happened ever, and it worked out, and he talked to us and he gave us some feedback, he connected us to his staff, and we were better off for it.
because we are nice guys and people react positively on that fact.
And tell me, Max, about this age issue when you were forming.
It's a bit disappointing really from my side, because yes, I was underage when we were starting like the journey, let's say, but we actually had a very simple solution that was just to wait with the incorporation of the company until I was 18. So I didn't have to go through any legislative processes, but it is indeed possible. And I explored that option to have a court basically make you an adult before you are an adult by age, but I didn't have to do that actually. We just waited.
Yeah, very cool. Max Tavish, I have a question. So that I can tell you that the podcast we are doing with Tomash, it's not focused only on VC. Yes, there is some audience VC and family offices, but significant part of the audience are early stage entrepreneurs or folks that plan to become entrepreneurs and innovators in healthcare. So with this, there is a question regarding the team. So is it possible to do it like alone? Do you need like only two guys? Or is it the whole your team now, like Tobias and Max? So tell us about this. What about team for a successful? Okay, I mean you're not like unicorn yet. So you are moving quite forward in a very. In the direction you think is right. I mean, we all see is right. So, tell us about team. What the team should be for healthcare for digital health startup.
So I think in an ideal world,
yeah.
You answer differently from my side. I think to answer one of your questions, I think it's quite hard to do it alone. I think having partners in a startup is very important. And actually, to that matter, I think having two partners, as in you have three co-founders, is a great number. I think two people, when they argue with each other, you can have a sort of deadlock. With three people, there's always one to calm them down. I think three is a perfect number for the number of co-founders, but there are many studies from Y Combinator on what the perfect number of co-founders is. And so for the sort of team composition, I think it's quite important to have someone from the tech world, someone from like the sales sort of like sales or design or like understanding the user asking questions world. And then I think someone from like a hardcore operations sort of background to have is like an ideal sort of team composition. But honestly, there's no like one size fits all solution. It was what worked for us, but yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, I agree. We started as three founders and each is very unique in our skill set. For example, Christoph, he's sitting in the next room. He's very organized. He can do stuff. You have a problem today and tomorrow he will solve it. And I love it about him. And he can always see what steps are in front of us, even for several months. And he can get us back on the track and actually like do stuff. And that's amazing. And for example, Max, he's very fluent in everything related to hardware, related to software and firmware, and also related to investors' universe, let's say.
Yeah, indeed.
Because he was part of the JNC Bank.
JNT Bank, yeah, venture capital and private equity fund.
And that was crucial during the last investment round because suddenly we have an insider with all the necessary contacts, but also with the knowledge of all the workflows and someone who is on our side, not on the opposite side, meaning that we have trust suddenly that everything that is being said are not bullshits, that this is relevant conversation among equals. This was very important. And for example, my background is in product design, in psychology, in sales. And I'm very happy with microphone in my hand, let's say. So
I actually, because Tobias said nice things about me and Krzysztof, maybe I can take the sort of the mantle of saying nice things about him for a change. But I think what Tobias's strength is really just asking questions. Honestly, just asking. He's the best person ever at asking questions and understanding what the person who's sitting at the opposite of the table just wants. Right, so he understands the motivation of the person, even if it's emotional. He understands the emotion behind that, right? So he can like decipher what's actually being said. He's very patient with people, much more than I ever will be, and so just great at understanding people and understanding their needs, and also as he mentioned, with like with a microphone in his hand, presenting, going in front of 1,000, 100,000, 10 people, whatever. He doesn't care. He goes in front of them. He talks about what we do with great passion, and people. It's such great passion that it's quite contagious, and it's sort of like. It contains the people in the room, right? And they're interested in what we're doing. And so that's great for hiring as well. So it's really a great combination of people, I would say.
And at the same time, we are all generalists that are happy to learn something new in the process. Meaning that even in this very small team, we are able to manage a lot of stuff around us. But from some point of time, we needed help. And currently, there is, I think, rule of thumb, 11 people,
yep.
including us, helping with the project. Not including investors, but people like external designer, external hardware consultant, and lawyers, for example. People that doesn't make sense to have in the projects from the day one, but they are necessary in during the journey to help yeah. us like get over some obstacles, and basically without them again we wouldn't be
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I think as founders we've all come to see that it's really important to be willing to learn and to have an open mind, right? Because you cannot be an expert on everything, and you're not an expert on everything, and it's useful just to face that in life in general. But here especially, and it's very useful to sort of understand that I can ask questions, I can talk to people, and I need to talk to people, and they have the expertise, and I'm here as like a conduit for it. I need to sort of like take it and then put it into the context of my own project. But I can't pretend that I know everything, even about like programming. I have to sort of put my ego aside and say like I'm not the best programmer. Probably there are probably better programmers out there, so I can hire them.
And this has such a good response on the user. Like interaction as well. For example, when I talk to nurse, I always start with tell me whether this is bullshit or not. Break it. Please help me understand what I don't right. see. You are a partner in this. I'm not here to sell you anything. No, please break it. And like this is suddenly a place for mutual understanding, for like building something together. Opposed to and forcing this on you, and like this is helping us on a daily basis, like tremendously.
Guys, it's fascinating. Sorry, Yevgeny, can I go ahead or?
Yes, please. I it's fascinating. Also, so I want to follow up, but please go ahead. Yes, I will.
Well. It's a good sign. Each of us is up with a question, but I understand it that you have this nurse-driven approach where you try to make their lives easier. And it certainly helps that you have prototypes of your device currently set up and running in not just one, but more hospitals, which also may prevent this fallacy that based on the demands and needs of just one client, one hospital, you design everything and then you discover later on, okay, but the world is different. There are different hospitals. Where I'm heading with the question is no doubt the fact that you are piloting at a number of beds, hospital beds in the country, must have helped you to convince the investors that you are going in the right direction. But maybe given also Max's experience with venture capital, could you tell our audience who are hoping to successfully close investment rounds, what has been easy, difficult, what are your lessons learned from your early seed in investment round? Because it's it's very rare that we get a chance to interview who is just has just signed the papers.
Well, I'm going to give my view and then I'm going to Tobias give his view as well. But from my perspective, there's several points. First of all, it's just probably the most important thing, honestly, is to be very authentic. As a person who worked, I worked for 2 years in a VC fund, you can tell when the founder is not being authentic, when they're either not necessarily lying, but making stuff up or doing like a white lie, you know, and lying a tiny bit. You can tell that very easily, that they're like, you know, from their intonation and their sort of what they're doing with their face and stuff. Just be authentic before you go on a call with VCs, or before you even start raising. You need to sort of like get your story straight, get your story together, and what you're going to communicate and what your strengths are, what your strengths aren't. And you know, you cannot do everything. It's fine to say that, like, I'm not experienced with, I don't know, hardware development or hardware manufacturing or something. You can tell that to investors and that they can see that, right? Maybe they can help you with that, but you cannot tell them that you can do everything, right? Because you can't anyway, so they'll see right through it. And then another sort of, I think, important piece of advice is exactly as you said, to have a user for your device, like it's, or your idea, right? It's very well and nice to have an idea, but if you just like communicate to them, they don't understand the industry, and you know, they don't trust, to a certain extent, they don't trust their own judgment. Like, they're, if it makes sense to them, that doesn't mean that it will make sense to the person who's paying for it, right? So you need to have a user, and very, very ideally, you need to have a user who's happy to speak for you. Like, get a sort of advocate, get an evangelist, get someone who's happy with your product, who's used it before, to sort of be like a reference for you. Connect them with your investors on a separate call. You don't have to even be there. And they'll ask their questions. They understand the sort of perspective of the user. And hopefully, if the person you picked likes your product, they will give a positive reference. And that makes a massive difference in fundraising, at least I find.
My take is that it's a mutual relationship. That you can always decide whether you want that investor or not. And also the other side can clearly see whether they is like, whether they're, how to say it, smell, whether you smell them the right way, in a sense.
Oh, whether there's like mutual chemistry between the people.
Something like that, yeah. And just recently I read this advice: don't work with people that you are not willing to hug, because that means that something is wrong between the two of you. That's, they're not like along with your emotional state, your philosophical state. So having investors that you can trust, that you are willing to hug, is making a difference. And I really hope that our current round of investors are the good people that will help us, not just with the money, but also with their expertise, with their opinions, without forcing us to do stuff that doesn't make sense in the long term. And yeah, like this chemistry is super important, especially.
But they are highly huggable, exactly. Huggable investors. It's a new buzzword.
They are. But to sort of touch on what Tobias said, I think it's, as he said, you can pick your investors, and there's always more investors on the market. Like it is rarely going to happen that you've spoken to everyone and everyone has said no to you. And it's also quite important to not take things very personally, in the sense that like if you go on a call with an investor and they tell you straight up, like, I don't think this makes sense, then you shouldn't take it personally and like take it as a personal attack, take it as them saying that you don't make sense or your ideas don't make sense. You know, it's only business for both sides, and they can be wrong. They have been wrong. You know, Airbnb was rejected by hundreds of investors, and then look what they're now. So we don't take things personally. And if you're talking to investors, talk to many. Don't just like pick four and then like in your mind make up like the sort of idea that they're the only investors you can ever get, because you're just going to be frustrated.
It's the same stuff as with dating, basically. You probably kind of is, won't marry the first person that you ever date. If you do, perfect. I wish good luck to you, and hopefully it will end well. But in most cases, it's not the case. So approach it like that. Again, it's a relationship. And it's very hard to find people that are very the same as you or complementary to you. Does it make sense? Hopefully it does.
It makes a lot of sense, and just and following this idiom of like of relationships, so that about like entrepreneurship and innovation, It's almost like marriage, yes, but it is longer, much longer than the usual one. So it is, you need to be like more specific with those who you consider as partners. But guys, thanks for sharing so much insights with our audience. I'm very impressed. If I would start digital health innovation startup, so I would like listen to this podcast first, and no doubt. But still, actually, it's been a journey. It's been a while. I mean, it's more than 2 years you've like in this journey, could you please share what helps you to move faster? Yeah, in this, and what was like the real problem? Maybe something in the ecosystem and the environment should be changed. Yeah, we all know about regulation. We cannot like move it, like or eliminate it immediately. Actually, in fact, we need it. Yes, and it takes time. But could you maybe share with the audience your maybe lessons learned? What really helps to move faster? And actually, you're moving fast. What's your secret sauce? If you what are the what are the real problems? If you can share.
Well, there will be different perspectives on this. So maybe I will touch on what happened to us or what worked with us, and then Tobias can say a more general thing and what sort of in the future. I think with us, it wasn't as much the ecosystem as it was just not being focused. In quite a lot of ways, because I was still in high school, the guys still had full-time jobs aside, and this was like a side project we were doing on you know, weeknights, weekends, whatever, but it wasn't like our main thing, so that's really that was bogging us down for quite a lot of time. And then what really helped us now is essentially just going full-time into the company, committing to it, and just being focused and being here present every day together in an office. It everything just moves much faster, and like I'm not criticizing remote work, but if you want to do innovation, you need to sort of be together in a room. It works much, much better, I think.
Yeah, agree, especially with the last part. For me, from the environmental perspective, everything that can pour more courage to your bloodstream is very welcome. For us, it was definitely both the hospital coming to us after the hackathon, but also the very existence of the Celeste News program that helped us get behind the curtain to get more contacts with relevant people and to get some people coming to us more often, stating that they are from a relevant like area and this makes sense for them. And telling us, please guys, continue. How can we support you? Like this, especially when you are bootstrapping the stuff, when you are dealing with your everyday shit, with families and work and everything, this is the driving force. And for me especially, like being in touch with the nurses, with the real end users and seeing their positive response, like this was the fuel that get us over every possible obstacle and helping even each other when we were down.
Yeah.
Just remember this. Yeah. Remember that particular person.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Let's continue. And there were multiple moments that we were almost about to give up, but we didn't. And
yeah,
that's the difference, I guess.
Yeah, but probably the... If there was one thing to sort of take away as like the key to what we've done, I'm specifically not using the word success because we haven't succeeded yet, but to what's happened so far in this company, it would be resilience. Most of all, it's just staying in it and just like going forward. Any progress is progress, and just every day is moving up, even by 0.1%, it's still progress.
And do more Celestinos.
True.
I want to see more Celestina alumni and people like them to grow this world. So
yeah, thanks for the support to them. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, we are on it. We are on it. We are soon to launch our next batch. I liked from what you said, you Tobias, you used the expression dealing with your everyday shit. Maybe it's a new product idea for your new product line, because so far you've been dealing with everyday piss, and now maybe, you know, there's a strategy. It can be overlooked by industry, and I'm sure that there's all sorts of things that our wonderful bodies produce that can get your attention, really. So it's been great. Thanks for being with us on the Venture Vitals, of sharing your advice, going through the financing round, and I think communicating and projecting enthusiasm and willingness to grow as fast as hell. And I and me personally, I wish you good luck. Quite obviously, as I am in a tiny part of your adventure, and it's nice to see and to witness that those innovation events, programs, and activities that we organize actually do work and make sense. So thank you again. Good luck for the future. Deal with your everyday piss and shit the way HDG Medical does, guys.
Yeah.
Go HDG Medical.
Piss well. Thank you.